At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
On your lips. Charlotte Soccer Show, John Hayes, Danny Brams. We're here on a Wednesday evening. It's 5:30, Danny Brams, and we're finally ready to talk about it. We're live on YouTube. And we're happy to be here on a new episode of Charlotte Soccer Show. It's great to see you, Danny. And I'm happy to talk to you tonight because I'm in a much better mood than I was this time. At this point, what is it now? Almost 10 days ago.
It took some time, Johnny. It just takes some time. It'll go. You're in the middle of the ride. It took some time to get over it for sure.
Jimmy World.
Yeah, Jimmy E. World, the middle, baby. Big hit from back in the early aughts. It took some time, dude, because we were even going to record this episode last week and we were raring to go and we were making the plans and I hit you up, John, and I said, John, I'm just not ready to talk about it yet. I'm sorry. Can we do this next week? And you said, yes, thank you for thanks for saying something. And it needed to be said at the time. So here we are finally, 10 days later, to talk about Orlando eliminating the crown from the first round of the 2024 MLS playoffs. We were 1 minute away, John. We were 1 minute away from what eventually would have been hosting Atlanta United in the conference semifinals this upcoming Saturday. Instead, Atlanta will be headed to Orlando for that match because they pulled off an incredible upset of Leo Messi's Miami. And Charlotte FC, unfortunately, went home. And in the interim, since that loss, should mention some things that have happened. Dino gave a great message to the fans and thanked everyone for their contributions to a great season. That was awesome to see. You can find that on the Charlotte FC official YouTube. Great postseason message from Dino. Christian Colina, goalkeeper of the year. You talk about hardware. You talk about trophies. The Charlotte FC trophy case finally has something other than the Goalie Wars belt in it, right? Like we have goalkeeper of the year. That's a pretty prestigious individual honor, if you ask me. I think Kalina surely deserved it, and it's a small consolation for the season being over, but it is nice to see. And now we move on. Player end of year roster decisions are coming up. We're going to do a whole like end of season recap. Those episodes are still to come. Right now, even though it's, you know, a week and a half later, we're still not — the title of this episode is "We're Still Not Over It," because I don't know if I'm over it yet, but we're finally here to talk about it. We're here to look at some things. And thanks for everyone who's joining us live. Thanks for everyone who's watching this back later. A lot of people are probably still at work as we're taping this, so we're not expecting a huge live audience, but we do have some TIFOs questions on the back end of this episode that we will be getting to. So thanks for everyone who submitted questions. And what do you think, Johnny? What's your takeaway now, 10 days later, after the loss?
Well, I want to go back to that moment where Karol Swierski gave Charlotte FC the lead late in this match.
Let's do it. Here we are.
This is, to me, the most important moment of the match. It's the the 81st minute, Svirsky is leading the attack, dishes the ball out wide, slots it in the bottom left corner of the net, and it's a moment that all of a sudden you start to believe, and it's a moment that ultimately you have to remember now is a moment that is not memorable. That is, this was the moment for Kyle Svirsky, for Charlotte FC. This was it. We've talked about this guy for so many years now, and this club was waiting for this moment, and it got it, which is the best moment of the season for me is right here. It's Svirsky getting it done, and ultimately you go later on in the match and you go to the late and added time, and all of that comes crashing down, and I think the cruelest of ways. And Christian Kalina, if you go back, what is it, 10 minutes into added time, Danny? That happens 10 minutes into added time.
Yeah, it was 8 minutes into a 9 minute. I think it was 9 minutes of added time that they added. It's coming up here. We'll just keep watching this because it is so nice and so great to see Liel.
You're gonna get us banned with all this.
I hope not. No, this is the official highlight. So I don't think they ban you if you just show stuff that they've already shown. You only get banned if you show stuff that they didn't officially show. But you know, there's 5 minutes, 85th minute in 9 minutes in. Kalina makes a nice save on a Jansen header.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, though, like I don't want this to be a highlight show. Like it's like there's moments in this game. Like none of this matters to me, Danny. This is 10 days ago at this point. Like this is not a highlight show for me. Like it's time to talk about what this actual game meant.
Well, you know? Well, I mean, like, I just, you
this,
know.
At this point, though, like I'm saying, like the Svirsky goal and the PK at the end of added time that's the only thing that matters from this match.
Well, it's coming right up. I didn't get a chance to clip these highlights very
no,
well.
No, I'm not saying it. Like, I don't mean it that way. Like, of course it's fine. It's nice to see these highlights and relive this moment, but I didn't want to relive this much of it.
Well, as we said, Deani didn't need to do it. And it's a rough scene.
The MLS didn't... officiating. How do you expect to show this and not just like go off on MLS ref?
Well,
right. Like at this point in the show, you just have to just address the fact that the refereeing was pitiful and this league is an embarrassment.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's weird that they didn't even give us a replay of that. I just wanted to see the replay of the penalty one more time, but they didn't even show it. So yeah. You know, they reviewed it and I think it's that weird thing where it is a dive, but it is a penalty. Does that make sense to you? Like, He pulled the shirt and the guy went down, but the guy didn't need to go down. He kind of threw himself down, Duncan McGuire, and you saw the fact
that we're in 10 minutes of added time to begin with.
Right. Yeah,
forget
I agree.
About the actual, you know, forget about, you know, everything just takes forever. Right? Even if the referee does take a look and decides it's a PK, why is it taking so long? I mean, once these referees got into added time, they totally erase the first 90 minutes of the game, which was a shame.
Yeah, and as you saw the 9 minutes went up, it was almost like a lump formed in my throat, and I was like, oh god, like here we go, you know, like how are we going to hold on for 10 more minutes against what became an onslaught, what you knew was going to happen. Charlotte's the lower seed. Orlando's, you know, Orlando is a club that you feel like MLS likes them more. You know. McGuire kind of threw himself on the ground, and even though he was pulled backwards, he jumped forwards, and that was kind of a weird thing. So, it's pain, Johnny. It's pain. It's pure pain.
And, it is.
I don't know what to think about it other than
be serious. The league needs to be like serious about itself, and what that means is there's no angle to decide whether Patrick Osmond is actually offsides or not on what could have been the first goal of the game in the first half. There's no angle there. This VAR review because of a soft tug of the shirt late in the match. I mean, if it wasn't called, do you think anybody would have cared 2 days later?
Yeah, I think Orlando would have been salty either way. Orlando fans were pretty set that that was a PK. And again, I think it was fair. I think it was a mistake by Deonte because it was on a ball that was crossed in from the wing that was always going to Kalina. McGuire was never really a threat to get on the end of that cross. So that's why I say Deonte didn't need to do it because the ball was destined for Christian yeah. Kalina's arms anyway. And again, I think McGuire embellished it. I think McGuire, you could almost say, took a dive. But Deonte, in the end, I have to point the finger at him and say, dude, you didn't need to do that.
Yeah, sure. We can point the finger at Deonte. I would say that he was a huge factor in Charlotte's win in game two. And sure. and was a huge factor in Charlotte's draw. Unfortunately, he's the man who's caught in the box. He's caught with his hand in the Halloween candy jar, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the club has to go into extra time training the PKs, mm-hmm. and the momentum was gone. Like, of course they were going to lose those PKs. Kalina did his job, and.
Yeah. He saved the PK. And what, like, I've heard people say, like, oh, it's, you know, if the goalkeeper saves the PK, it should just be a goal kick at that point. You shouldn't be allowed to tap in the rebound. I don't want to get into that because, I mean, it is the, like, we're not going to change the rules here of the sport on this podcast. That is how it works in hockey. You know, like if you save a penalty in hockey, they don't get to just tap in the rebound.
Yeah, but that's a much different situation. Let's just address that. I mean, it's not the players, the other skaters are so far away from the net and you know what I mean? It's just the guys are right. End play doesn't continue if the goalie saves it.
Right. And I find myself wishing it was that way in soccer now.
Well, I'm just like, seriously though, if you're the type of person that like wants to change a rule after your team has lost a tough game,
reevaluate
what you think about the sport of soccer, because that's not exactly how this works.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I brought up on the screen here on YouTube, Johnny, I brought up a player ratings graphic just to sort of hammer home that point you made that even giving up a penalty, Deonte still comes in with a 6.8 rating. That's just like speaks to how he would probably be well over 7. He'd probably be the highest rated player on the team if not for giving up that penalty, you know, amongst the starters, besides Kalina, obviously. So that just to its own self speaks to the contribution he was making. He is a big part of the reason that we were in that match. And, you know, I'll also bring up the attacking momentum graphic. You can see that Orlando pretty much dominated the attacking pressure, and our defense was under the cosh the whole time. When Carroll got the goal, it was on a counterattack, and it being on the road playing in Orlando, it was clear that Orlando was the aggressor. Charlotte FC was not playing for penalties, but they were just playing the pragmatic style that they kind of had to in this matchup, and they faced a lot of pressure, and Deonte and the back line and Westwood were huge in sort of like, you never felt like Orlando was a huge threat to score, but they did always have the ball and they were in their attacking zone all the way up until that Carroll counterattack, which again was twisted on a mistake by Robin Jansen, the Orlando center back. So
we talked about it. You know, we talked about it, right? We've addressed the game. We've addressed the game.
Yes.
Right? Like we've talked about it. It's 10 days later. We've talked about it. And I think that's good. I think that's good. I think it's healthy, Danny. I think it's good for us to get together and have a discussion.
Yes, yes. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go next? I mean, what are you thinking here?
We could continue to rant and rave and bitch and moan about kind of this league and
we could
and
we could.
Everything about the match and just kind of how to, but why would you go down that road? Like why would you, because I think you said it best. It's like, we're not, you know, changing rules on this podcast. Nobody's going to, you know, take our advice. MLS is going to change rules. They're going to do whatever the heck they want. And I think that's fine. But as far as being serious is concerned, it's probably more on the MLS pro referees. Isn't that the name of the organization?
Yeah.
Pro referees.
Yeah. Yep. Professional referees organization. Yeah. Is the acronym.
Yeah. Pro referees. Mm-hmm. And they're a different group than MLS. So like they're a contracted.
Yeah.
group by MLS, and they're just not good enough. And if they're going to have bar across these stadiums, then they have to have correct angles. Like if you don't have bar, that's totally fine.
Especially at a soccer-specific stadium, it's embarrassing that there's not like a down-the-line shot of that Adjumon goal that was ruled offside late. You know, the flag goes up late. I think it was pretty clear that the right back was keeping Adjumon onside, and there was never any really good way to look at it. I think that's one of those ones that, again, if it had been ruled a goal and the flag didn't go up, I don't think they would have overturned it on a review, similar to what you were saying about Maguire's penalty. They were kind of stuck with the ruling on the field because they didn't have a good enough angle to show what actually happened on the replay.
We're talking about a match, the biggest match of the season, and VAR is involved in both situations. Yes. That's all that I'm saying, right? It's a huge part of the match, and we don't have to, you know, we can't change it, and we just have to evaluate. Because I think the crazy thing about VAR is that it's still new and that it's not really a settled product across the globe.
Different leagues do it different ways. The FIFA does it different from UEFA, does it different from Premier League, does it different from MLS. There's no standard that you can really point to.
But soccer is a standard. Like the offside rule is the same. And I think the global language of soccer, the reason why people really love it is because you can roll out a ball. And people from all different countries who speak different languages can play by the rules of the game pretty easily without having to actually communicate verbally and speak the same language. Then all of a sudden VAR gets involved and there's like a million different rules.
Yeah, well, we do it this way. We do it that way. You know, it's like, it's annoying.
I think fans don't know that. And it's really hard to just kind of,
sometimes the decision's made in a replay center, like miles and miles away. Sometimes it's the ref on the field goes and takes a look at it. You know, it's like wherever you are. There needs to be a standard. I agree. You're right.
I think the post-game comments from a lot of the players and a lot of the people in and around the club, manager, of course, Dean's been talking about the refereeing the entire season.
Every damn post-game.
You've brought it up. We've played him talking about it. We laugh about it. Yeah. Like we finally got to the end of the season. I guess Dean was right the entire time.
I know. As always, Dino was at the wheel the entire fucking time. You know, what can I say? Like Dino's the ref who is the manager in MLS who will find something to complain about the referees even in a big win. You know, I think even in the 4-0 win against New England, he was like, "Yeah, the referee fucked this one up too." You know, like that's just
right, kind of his thing. So,
but he was right. He was right for sure. I don't know what to say. I mean, how are you? So you don't want to, you know, super dive into the nitty gritty. So let's just talk vibes. Let's talk emotions. Like what is your emotion? Like I said at the beginning, this is not a season review show, but the season is over. I'd love just some impressions from you about like how you felt about the season. Was it a success year one under Dino? Is something to build on? I mean, these are kind of platitudes, but what do you really think?
Let's start here with our mutual friend, our good friend, Michael Bolak, who I'm curious how he feels as well, for what it's worth. So let's bring him into the discussion. He says, with a solid season in the books, what needs to be addressed in the offseason and what are your expectations for next season? I want to focus on specifically the last part of that question, that two-parter, of course. And the expectations for next season for me are like, okay, top five turns to top four. You get that home field advantage. Mm-hmm. And I feel good about that. I feel like Charlotte FC is going into the offseason once again with positive momentum, even though it was a really bitter end to the year. It was a top five Eastern Conference finish. You took Orlando to game three. Should have almost hosted the Eastern Conference semifinal at the Keep. How do you take that? Bottle it up and move it forward. I feel good 10 days later. That's why we waited to do this show.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, yeah, we're slowly but surely getting ourselves over. I agree. I think one expectation I have for next season is to play the entire season with all three designated players. I think that's a good goal.
We should try that.
You know, it might work, you know, because I think if you think about it, if Charlotte FC had been hosting this match, this series, if Charlotte FC was the it was the four seed instead of the five and had two matches at home versus Orlando, I think they advance easy. And there's only 1 point difference in the table. 51 versus 52 points was the decider between home field advantage and having to go on the road for two out of three games in the first round. And there was definitely a lot more than 1 point left out on the pitch in multiple games. You know, there was a couple stretches of the season where the team just like went to crap and played boring, as we said. And like you get two extra points, and all of a sudden we're the number four. We're in the top four, and we're Ash Hamrick, one of our commenters. What's up, Ash? Welcome. He says top four minimum. I agree. We should have been top four this year, so we should definitely be top four next year.
He wrote in a T-Post question as well before the show. He asked us, rate Dino's first season out of 10. I think that's a fun question. If you have to pick 1 through 10, where would it be?
Am I being too – I almost want to say 10 out of 10. I depending on what your goals for the season – like, what could Dino have done better? I don't really know. I think he maximized everything. I think Dino's a 10 out of 10. I think he's the manager of the year in MLS. I know he's not going to actually win that award, but if I was voting, that's who I would vote for. It's pretty obvious. I think probably Tata Martino, who's already quit Miami. He quit yesterday. I think he's probably going to end up as the manager of the year. But for me, it's Dean Smith is the manager of the year. Easy. He took it to a team that was kind of a joke last year, and like by hook or by crook, you know, kind of crawled their way into a wild card spot. And this time he had to rebuild the roster on the fly a couple times. He had to deal with Carroll leaving in preseason and coming back and working him into the squad. I mean, I'm giving Dino a 10 out of 10. Sorry, I'm biased.
No, it's fine. I like it. 10 out of 10 is a good answer, but I'm going to give him an 8 out of 10. An 8 out of 10, I think, is probably appropriate for me. He's done unbelievably well. 8 out of 10 for me is a super high rating. So 10 out of 10 is as well, of course.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid at that point, but yeah.
Considering who was managing this squad before Dean Smith, yeah, I mean, it is a 10 out of 10 compared to what was here in the past. Mm-hmm. Level Up Loop, he's got a great question for us. He says, top road trip destinations for next season?
Well, we don't know the schedule, but I'm going to say I'd like to get back to D.C., knowing that we will be playing, just if we look at the Eastern Conference teams that we know are on our schedule, I would like to get to D.C. again. We didn't go this year. We went both of the first 2 years, and it was a great trip. So I will hope to go to D.C. again. Just to not answer the question that was actually asked, I would say the trip to Austin this year was incredible. And I would, if we end up, we probably won't be going to Austin again this next upcoming season. That's unfortunate, but I had a blast. And if I'm picking a West Coast spot that I'd like to go to see next year, I would like to go get a Nat Colorado probably and go to Denver and hang out in Denver for a little bit and go check that out. But you know, everybody loves to go to Atlanta because it's easy, and that's fine. And, you know, I went to Nashville this past year, and it was okay. I thought their stadium was highly overrated, and that whole experience was not ideal. I have no desire to ever go back to Orlando ever again, although I have been to a Charlotte FC match in Orlando. San Diego, Christian Stuyvesant in the comments throws up San Diego. If we could get – if Charlotte FC is playing at San Diego, you're damn sure – bet that I will make that a priority because San Diego is one of my favorite cities in the United States. It's
Did you see that Juan Mata bought into San Diego?
No,
as my minority owner. Yeah,
Juan Mata. I love it. Your doppelganger, Juan Mata, John. I mean, everybody says you and Mata are twinsies.
Mike Mecklenburger tweets in. What's up, Mike? He says, simple two part question about the roster: who stays and who goes? Who should stay and who should be released? That, Mike, that's its own episode. Although we said we were going to be reactionary on this podcast moving forward, and I think this is a great example of that. But we do, I think something is coming down the pipeline. Decisions will be made, I think, sooner rather than later on this. Mm-hmm. Who should stay or who should go? For me, the club's going to make that call, and we're going to react to it. I think it's a big discussion for sure. And there's a lot of players, Danny Brams, who could potentially leave the club.
Yeah, I think Urso's gone. I don't think Jamie Patterson really is going to come back necessarily. The big decision is obviously going to be Pep Biel. Does he stay on as a designated player? I'm really anxious to see what the club does there. And I think there's also a big decision on Jalen Lindsay. Charlotte has an opportunity to pick up his option, I believe, for next year. So it's kind of a club decision whether he comes back or not. And Jalen's a guy who probably could start in this league and is stuck behind Nathan Byrne. And that's right. I'm not saying that he deserves a start over Byrne. I think Byrne has earned that spot and should be our starting right back next year. But Jalen probably would want to fight, go somewhere where he has a chance to fight for a starting role, although he's not a bad backup to have. So yeah, I think if it's up to me, I'm going to let Jalen walk and go do his thing. I don't know about Pep Biel. Pep and Pat in the pockets, man. Do you want Pep to come back as a designated player next year, or do you think we should try to do something bigger, more ambitious with that spot?
No, I think we should definitely bring him back as a DP. Certainly. Okay. And it falls, I think, perfectly with Jay Doak's question. Is Miguel Almiron headed our way? Like, is there a world where Pep Biel and Miguel Almiron are both on the same squad next season? Is it Miguel Almiron, Patrick Aujamong, and Pep Biel?
Are you talking about the front three? Pep, Pat, and the Paraguayan in the pockets? Let's go.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. We made a run at Almiron this year. It didn't quite work out. It was a little close to the deadline. There's differing accounts of how close we really got to getting him. Is the spot going to free up? Is Carroll going to stay or go? I mean, that's a big decision. Are we going to go through this whole freaking dance with Carroll? Is he staying or is he going again? I think Carroll did pretty well on his return. I was happy to have Carroll on the squad ultimately, even though I've ridden the roller coaster with Carroll Swiderski. I've taken the journey. He's gone from my favorite player on the club to a guy that I was happy to see leave, a guy that I didn't think would ever come back, and then he did come back, and I don't know. Then I was happy that he was back, but ultimately, if we can sell him for a few bucks more than we bought him for, I'd say let him go. Let him go chase his Europe thing. I think he did. He performed well enough in his return to MLS. He became a guy. But he wasn't starting at the end of the year, right? I mean, Patrick Aujamong starts in the most important match of the season over Carroll. Carroll does deliver the goal late, but I'd rather just take our chances with Aujamong at striker and get some really sick, creative players in the midfield with the DP money.
There's smoke, and this is from Brandon Davis, this one. There's smoke of French interest in Milanda. We've signed him to an extension. Do you think we should sell now or wait? We have the depth to move, but should we? It's a good question, and I think that, for me, it's all about business. Let's see what the offers look like and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a nice bit of business to sell Adielson at this point. We got him for peanuts. If we get a chance to send him back to his home country playing in the top division in Ligue 1, I think he'd be happy with that. I think he's committed to the project here. I don't think he's trying to get out, and I think he is one of the best center backs in MLS. So you hate to see that walk out the door, but Privet's developing. I think Ream probably has another good season left in him. So I don't hate the idea of selling Milanda. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
All of a sudden, Tim Ream, that signing, if Milanda does get sold, all of a sudden he can go maybe play his natural like center back position more centrally. Andrew Beals, he asked a great question. Where do we go from here as an organization? I know this is probably a loaded question. I think this is where on the show we basically mentioned, like, where do we go here as an organization? That's like when you ask the question that way, I think you think about the president, Joe LeBoux. You think about the sporting director. You think about Zoran Crneta, of course, Bobby Blair, the assistant GM as well. The front office, the organization, that's where. Those three are leading the charge when it comes to this team in the front office, and it seems like they're doing a heck of a job bringing Dean Smith in, getting some Carol Swirsky back, getting a lot out of this team and at the right time, signing Tim Ream. All of a sudden things are looking pretty good. Pep Biel playing well. Liel Abada, a name we haven't mentioned as well. They did that business too.
Got the assist. Like the,
And by the way, if you look at the organization from a front like a ticketing point of view, they're top of the charts in MLS. I mean, the Charlotte FC is doing really good business locally. Everybody here in town knows about Charlotte FC, and it's a really nice asset in Tempur Sports and Entertainment. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, still out. You know, the Panthers have sort of gotten their act together a little bit, but Charlotte FC still much better track record than Carolina Panthers as far as a TSC portfolio. Don't forget about Liela Abada. He's 23 years old. You know, Liela Abada, his best days are still ahead of him, and I think he could have an absolute monster season next year. I think that signing is still going to there's still like the dividends from that signing have only just begun to come in. I think he's going to have a monster year out on the wing next season. Patrick Ajmong, we'd hope that he can get a little bit of a we've done entire episodes devoted to, you know, the challenges of exactly what you want to do with him. But he's someone that I think the club should invest in wholeheartedly. I just mentioned that a few minutes ago. Also, I do think there's a little bit of sort of like a firing line. There's, you know, there's a pecking order of like who's. I'm not saying anyone's on the hot seat right now, but I think if things don't go well, if things turn south, I think, you know, Zoran Crunetta probably is more in the line of fire ahead of Dean Smith and Joe LeBoux. You know, like I'd love to see all three of them continue to, and Bobby throw all four of those guys together. I'd love to see them continue. I'm not calling for anyone to be fired here, but I'm just saying. Dean Smith isn't going anywhere. I don't think it all falls at Joe's doorstep if the business side continues to go well. So if there's a poor start to next season for Charlotte FC, and so they find themselves bottom of the table when we get a few months in, I mean, I think, you know, and depending on the business that might get done in terms of who our three DPs are going to be at the start of next year, I mean, I think Zoran has got to feel a little bit of pressure to deliver results in this offseason. I hope. And I know that he does just from talking to him. I don't think I'm like talking out of school here saying that, you know, the pressure's on, that he can't stop. There's no resting on the laurels for the front office right now.
Zoran's job, I mean, like if you go into next year, Danny, and you're and the team gets off to a poor start, like it depends what the roster looks like. Like sure. To me, Zoran and the sporting staff's going to do work over the offseason, and they're going to do take a look at this roster, and they're going to make decisions, and we're going to figure those out. I think those decisions out sooner rather than later, like I said. And all of a sudden, we can start talking about those decisions. You know, for example, Patrick Ajmong, what kind of offseason does that look like? What kind of contract talks happen there? There's just so much more to look forward to. Will McNulty, shout out to you. We answered your question. Thanks so much. And there's one more. There's only one that we didn't get to, Danny. It's David Rowley. He asked, the fifth kit set is to be released this offseason. What direction do you think they'll go? Black and green was minty fresh. Berry Pop-Tart was cursed. What kind of vibe do we get next?
I want to go back to black. I want to go back. You know, I'm call me Amy Winehouse, baby, because I want to go back to black. You know, like I think black and mint was a sick look, and I'd love to see a fresh spin on that. We know for a fact, we've talked to Joe, that whatever the kit that's going to come out is going to be, it's already been designed and approved. They're already working on the 2026 kits probably at this point. So it hasn't been released, but it has been designed. And so there's a few people, not you or I, there are people inside the organization that know what this kit is going to look like. I want to go back. If it's up to me, go bring me back to black and mint for sure.
Black and mint. I'm always here for the minty fresh kits. Black for me would be solid. For me, I wouldn't mind something white, something fresh, something, you know, clean. Maybe I don't know if it could be all whites. You know, all whites with a you know, a blue stripe, Adidas stripe down the side. That could be fresh.
That's your Tottenham speaking right there. Yeah, I love it.
That could be fresh. It's Charlotte Soccer Show. I'm John Hayes. He's Danny Brams. Thanks so much for joining us this evening on the show, Danny. It's great to see you. And thanks so much to the Tifos for the questions. Thanks so much to everybody. As always, Danny Brams.
For the crown, baby.